They say plants like music.
Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. I'm seeing Matt Serra twice in the same day. We had our Jim and Sam show appearance this morning.
Yeah, I should have did it like this, Jimmy. I thought, you know what it was? I think on your show, it's like, I'm like, when we have guys on here, I'm thinking it's going to be 15 minutes. I'm like, you know, I've been held up at the house. Let me do it from remotely. And then I forget that it's one of those where you just sit and you hang out. I'm like, all right, I kind of didn't think that through. But I had fun. I hope it was an okay. Even though I couldn't see you, I had technical difficulties.
Well, next time you'll come on like this, we'll do it again soon. Because everybody, the fans all love you. And Sam loves you. And I certainly love you. And do you know Joe Coy at all?
No, I can't wait to meet him.
He's a really good comic. And he's a good guy, too. I know him for many years. So I'm happy. I never know if they've been on this show or just my radio show in the morning. So I think he's promoting a book. I've already promoted this on my other show. I don't remember. I have a shit memory.
Wow, you got a memory like me, bro.
I have a terrible memory.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I have a terrible memory. I'm trying to count on that terrible memory to help me forget about that Trilla show the other night. Ollie has style.
How are you,
Ollie?
What's up, legend? Matt, how are you, my brother? How are
you? Looking how you doing, buddy? Better looking Egyptian mirror. Look at you. And look at me, all bald heads. You look so good, though. I like that outfit looks comfortable.
Yeah, it's Ramadan, and I'm traveling, going to Jacksonville today, and I'm trying to be comfortable, and it's the best way to fly.
Now, where are you now? Are you going to Jacksonville from the airport, or are you driving there from another state?
I'm going to the airport today to fly to Jacksonville for Kamaru's fight. Yes.
How's he doing? We were going to have him today, but schedules got crossed. How is he feeling?
Man, listen, Kamaru is in great shape. You know, he was already in shape fighting with Gilbert, and you know, he's an active champion. He said he want to fight again. The UFC made it happen, and here we go. We have a huge fight in front, 15,000 fans, and it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
What do you think, too? Matt and I noticed, too, like after his last the win, he looked so dominant, and he said, put some respect on my, like he seems a little bit frustrated. Do you think that people are kind of not giving him the credit that they should give him as such a dominant champion?
I feel before the last fight, you know, people, when it comes to the ranking and all this kind of stuff, yeah, I don't think people is giving him enough credit. You know, if you look at the top five, he's the only guy in the top five is active. Kobe's not active. Masvidal didn't fight. Wonderboy didn't fight. He's the only guy said, you know what? I'm going to defend my title. And everybody, they just want to get win and sit on it and fight for the title, right? And I think he's a great champion, because great champion always defending his throne, right? And, you know, and also, a lot of this young athlete, you know, you only make money when you fight, right? If you're going to sit around, you're not going to make money. And you can buy everything in life except one thing. You can't buy time.
Yeah, it's very frustrating when you see somebody, you see people wasting time sometimes, and it's like, you know that they don't understand, like, you're not going to get this, like, you're only this age once, so you might as well utilize it, because, you know, I'm 53. I can't do shit I used to do when I was 26. So it's like, do it now while you can do it.
I agree with you. I think, you know, in life, you can buy everything, like I said. You cannot buy time, right? And these young guys, you know, just the only way they make money to fight, right? And real fighters like to fight. The other guys who want to sit around and stuff like that, they're just there, you know, maybe they want to be a champion, get some sponsorship and get some fame. But realistically, the only way to make a legacy by fighting and to make a living by fighting. This is my opinion.
Hey, Ali, let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
You know what you can't buy? You know what you shouldn't buy? One of those fucking Trilla fight cards. Did you see that shit show the other day? Did you see that fucking shit show, Jimmy? Did you see? I know you did. Ali, did you see that fucking shit show that was on the other night with Ben Askren and Paul? The whole event. Did you watch that thing?
I was watching the UFC. Listen, I don't really, you know, I don't really like this kind of stuff. People seem to like it, and everybody have their own niche, but for me, I'm a martial artist, you know. I'm a Enzo Gracie black belt,
fucking
like
man.
You. But not, it's your level, but...
You're there.
But also, I'm not a hater. If somebody making money, let them make money, you know. But for me, I'm not, you know, I didn't buy it because I feel like I want to watch Kevin Gastelum and Marvin and Robert Whittaker. That was a high-level mixed martial art. It was a beautiful fight. And, you know, of course, I see the highlights and stuff like that, like just being a fan. You know, but I didn't buy it.
Ali, let me tell you something. At one point during this shit show, I was going, listen, I was watching the UFC, but I'm watching that other thing on my phone. Listen, at one point, there's a fight going on. There's no cameras on the fight anymore. It's off to the side because Pete Davidson showed up and he's taking a picture with the show. They're taking selfies, him and Mario Lopez in it. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're not showing the fight. They're showing fucking crazy.
Yeah,
it's fucking crazy. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I couldn't believe. And next thing you know, there's girls dancing with their asses out. And at one point, I was going to listen to it. I go, all right, listen, my kids were there. I go, look, because I was going back and forth with this and that. I go, let's put this on for a second. You know, I go, let's put this back on. I go, look, there's some music. We got to listen to that. You know, I saw Ice Cube. And then there's this other girl on there. I go, oh, look, girls, you might know her. My kids are there. I got three daughters. The first line of the song, ready? You could play with my pussy. Don't play with my emotions. I go, wow. I go, kids, earmuffs. I got that shit off so fast. I go, this show was so fucking bad that it was actually like watching a fucking train wreck and then just stay on a train that like crashed and then kept going. And I don't know what I was watching, but it was something else.
We spoiled, you know, like, you know, the UFC and Dana White, they put a such high standard in production values and how they run a show. We got used to that. But when it comes to like boxing shows back in the 80s and the 90s, that's how it used to be, you know? And I think, you know, I don't really like watching a show, but stuff like that should not happen because you have a lot of kids watching, a lot of teenagers watching. And this is not what kind of matches we want to deliver. I hope they improve on their products and, you know, they do a better show. But it's Ramadan. I don't want to talk shit a lot. But I want to, but
you
don't
have
nice.
To. I'll do it for Ali. I'll do it for you, Ali. You got enough people that either love you or hate you. Okay.
Oh,
that. Yeah, I love you. Sure, I sure. love you. I love don't you care if anybody fucking hates me because I got you, I got Enzo, and I got my Jimmy Bird. I don't need nobody else.
For sure.
The fuck do I need?
For sure, man.
Also, too, meant to ask you, too, how is Habib? There was rumors that Habib was debating after Conor Poirier. He wasn't sure what he was going to do. Did that fight make a decision for him? Or what was his process of coming, kind of deciding like, no, I'm actually done. Was there a chance he was going to? Because everybody, of course, loves him and wants to watch him again.
Listen, I think when he watched his fight with these two guys, you know, that you know they didn't show him anything special. You know, Habib right now, he have businesses, he have everything. And he felt like he did everything he need to do in the sport, right? When he said he's done, I support him 100%. One of the things I never do, I never told the guy, hey, fight again. You know, but when he's talking about retirement, he should retire. He should retire. You know, I don't think anybody, because he's the only guy going to step in the cage and fight. But who I am to tell him to fight, right? And I think he smashed everybody in the lightweight division. The same thing Kamaru Usman is smashing everybody in the welterweight division. And right now, my opinion, Kamaru Usman is the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world, right? GSP is amazing. I love him. He's my friend, right? But when you compare two guys' career, Kamaru Usman is so much more dominant than George. Kamaru and his whole career in the UFC lost three rounds, right? George have two losses. And I'm not talking bad about George or anything, right? But I'm talking about 17 fight winning streak, the longest welterweight win in UFC history. And he's going to break the record this weekend, right? You know, he's fighting a guy who's a good fighter. But I all the time say, it's big difference between good fighter and great fighter. Kamaru Usman is a great fighter. Jorge Masvidal is a good fighter, right? Khabib Nurmagomedov is a good fighter. The rest of the division, they're good fighters, right? And I'm talking about Kamaru. My opinion, he's the most dominant welterweight in history.
Now, you're saying welterweight. Okay, yeah, I thought you were talking about that. Now, obviously Chandler is fighting Oliveira. There would be no shot at him possibly wanting the winner of that fight to kind of come back and reclaim the belt? And again, I'm thinking just selfishly as a fan to want to see.
Leave Habib alone, Jimmy.
Well, it's just look, it's a sign that people will miss you when they want to come back and see you.
Dana White is the greatest promoter of in any combat sport, and he's a very smart man. And if I'm the promoter, I'm gonna use a guy like Mike Chandler, who made a great debut, to fight him Oliveira. These two guys never lost to Khabib, right? If you put Gaethje in there, he lost to Khabib, right? And that's how the promoter thinks. Now, you need to give the fan time to forget about Khabib, right? Right? And you put two guys who never fought Khabib, and the fan always going to be, wow, this guy's for real, right? If you put Justin and Justin win, and he will win. I think Justin win. Gaethje is the best lightweight in the world today. This is what I think, right? And if you put Justin and win, now, wow, this is the guy who lost to Khabib, right? This is the guy who lost to Khabib. This is the guy who lost to Khabib. And now, you know, the UFC just did a good promotion move. They have these two guys fight. But Mike Chandler, remember, he just got knocked out by 145 guy in a different promotion, right? By Pitbull, right? And I think he's good, but I think he's not on this level, these guys in the UFC. This is my opinion, you know? I think the UFC is just, some of the guys there are just on a completely different level. And I think Gaethje, Poirier, these type of guys on a completely different level than, I think Oliveira, it's a very, very great, good fighter. And I think Oliveira, my opinion, he's going to finish.
Ali, your thoughts on Poirier, the trilogy match versus Conor McGregor?
I think Conor is a front runner. That's what I always think. It's no, you know, that's the truth. Like, if he doesn't get you there out of the first round, you know, he start panicking. And this is what I think, you know. And I think it's going to be the same thing. If he cannot get Dustin Poirier out of the first round, Dustin is a dog. He's going to come forward. He's going to put a lot of pressure. He's going to try to take him down. Remember, everything went south to Conor when Dustin take him down once, right? And he started having automatic nightmare. He's like, oh, my God. I think Khabib get him a disorder. Every time he's going to take down, he's going to get panicked and get tired. And I think maybe he have a disorder. Maybe he needs to see a doctor, maybe to get a little bit of help. Because I think every time his butt touches the mat, it's a nightmare again. Like, it's a nightmare again, right? And I think Conor, you know, he used to be a good fighter. But I think he lost a lot of time. And every time you lose, shift a piece of your heart, and I think his heart will become a little bit small.
And it's funny, it's a good point, because Conor had said something about too much time off is not good, you got to get your licks in. Like, after that last fight, he's like, just too much time of inactivity. So maybe, you know, we'll see what happens with this fight. But yeah, I mean, I don't see it.
Real champion don't use excuses. Real champion doesn't use excuses. This man, all the time, he want to find an excuse. If you lose, you lose. You move on. You get better. That's it, you know? But like Habib said, you can be training with 15, 16 years old kids and beating them up, and you think you're the man, right? Like, you know, like Enzo Gracie, old school, Matt Serra, Ricardo Almeida, all these guys. You go to the gym, there's a lot of sharks in the room. They try to smash each other. And guess what? When they fight, they're ready. Listen, if you become a world champion, you can be the captain running the ship. He's the boss. He's the coach. He's the manager. He's everything. Conor is the boss. And he does what he wanted to do. And guess what? There's so many other great topics to talk about better than this guy, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, it's an interesting fight, but I would rather see what is Justin Gaethje. What does he have something lined up, or what is Gaethje doing?
originally Justin, it was a talk for him to fight Mike Chandler, right? The UFC made a move. They put Oliveira Chandler. It is what it is. You know? But realistically, there's nobody out there make a lot of sense for Justin, right? And I'm going to have to see what's going to happen. You know, me and the matchmaker, Sean, always talk and try to figure things out. And, you know, we always handle business. You know, I always handle business behind closed door and we'll get it done. It's just timing. I think 50% of success of a fighter in the UFC, of course, being in a gym, but timing. A lot of time guys squeeze in, become a champion, right? Like Justin Gaethje was Tony Ferguson. He squeezed in, boom, beat him, become the interweight champion, right? And I think the timing is everything. And you just have to be smart to make smart move when you're on this level.
Is Zabit still, you're Zabit's manager? Yes?
Yes.
Where's he been?
Listen, Zabit, he's supposed to fight this one guy four times. Zabit show up and this guy never show up. Ray Rodriguez, right?
Yeah.
And now it's a little bit discouraging, you know? I think he deserves a title shot. He's on a 6-fight winning streak, long winning streak in the division. And he's just tired of this guy. And after Ramadan, we're going to figure out what we're going to do with him. And it's going to be completely up to him now, what he wanted to do, right? You know, this is something and it's going to be up to the UFC too. We're going to all talk and we're going to figure some out.
And, it's funny you mentioned Justin. And Gastelum is like this too, that he fights so well, even in a loss. He's still somebody that people want to see fight. Like even if Calvin loses a fight, it's an exciting fight. He's in it until the last minute of the fight. So even though he's lost a few fights, Calvin is still a guy that people would line up to see fight tomorrow.
Yeah, Calvin's great, man. You know, he took the fight on 4 weeks' notice. He stepped in against a guy who's an absolute stud. Robert Whitaker is an absolute monster, you know, and he lost fair and square. I don't think he lose any stocks, you know, and just we're going to go in there and, I'm being honest with you. At one point, Kevin Gaston's career, wasn't a professional. He wasn't. Now he's professional. He's doing everything right. He trained with Rafael Cordero. He's a great coach, I believe. And I think he's become a man now. He's not this little boy anymore. And I think losing to Robert Whittaker, it's no shame at all, you know. And you're going to see the best of Kevin Gaston coming. And you got Vettori coming. You got Brunson coming. And all my guys and they're doing really well, and let's see what happens.
And now Ramadan is happening now. Is Ramadan now?
Yeah, today is the seventh day of Ramadan. No water or food. Sun up, sun down. 3 more weeks to go, and it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling.
Well, I don't know anything about it. You can't drink any water or anything during the day.
No water, no food.
Then when it goes night, when it's nightfall, you could.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, when the sun goes down.
So is it like one of the, are there any ways, like, is there a thing like right before you drink water? Like, how do you time it out where you can actually go the whole day? Do you kind of like right before you'll have some and then that would drive me crazy.
It depends. Sometimes I wake up like middle of the night to drink something or eat something. And sometimes I don't wake up. I prefer to have my sleep. But, you know, it's a good month to really make you feel how the people who have needs, they don't have food, they don't have water. And I make you really appreciate life more. And I think it's healthy for you. It's almost like cleaning your body, you know, yeah. And cleaning your soul too. You know, I need it. I'm always like cussing and screaming and yelling at people. And this month I want to behave and it's good for me.
Oh, so it kind of calms you. It's like your calm month for the year.
I wish every month to become this way for me, to be honest. It's much better. You know, it's sometimes you get caught up in all this. I'm very emotional person, passionate person about the people I work with, about the sport. I really love, I truly love MMA so much. And sometimes I just too emotional, but it's, you know, I'm still emotional, but in Ramadan, I tone it down a little bit.
You know? Tone it down.
But I'm just, I want to let you know though, like before I go there, when I went to Henzo Gracie in 2006, Matt used to come there sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
Every time I saw him there, I always want to say hello, but I was shy. Now, because he's such a legend, and now I'm finally talking to a legend like him on a broadcast, and this is one of the highlights of my career. Thank you for having me, Matt and Jim, and I really appreciate you guys.
It's good talking to you again, Ali. Have a safe flight down, and good luck to Kamaru, and we'll talk to you again after Ramadan, I'm sure.
All right, Ali.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. You guys have a good one. All right. Bye.
Thanks, Ali.
To
Today's episode is brought to you by Devour, the official frozen meal of the UFC. They put big flavor first with premium meats, creamy sauces, and gooey cheeses. How good does this sound, Matt? Check out their buffalo chicken mac and cheese the next time you're in the freezer aisle. It's smothered in a spicy buffalo cheddar cheese sauce that'll knock your socks off. Or how about their loaded potatoes with Angus beef and bacon? God, that sounds good. It's, you guessed it, loaded with crispy bacon and delicious hunks of Angus beef. This sounds so good. Whatever you choose, Devour Meals is the new favorite frozen meal.
I love Devour, Jimmy, and I'm gonna get nuts with the meals, Jimmy.
Devour Meals, the official frozen meal of the UFC. Support for UFC Unfiltered comes from the official hair restoration partner of UFC, Hair Club. UFC fans notoriously take pride in the way they look. But if you're not dedicated to your hair health, you're not giving 100%. No matter what stage of hair loss you're experiencing, Hair Club is here to help personalize a solution for you. Hair Club offers hundreds of combinations of solutions to regrow, replace, or restore your hair. Cost shouldn't get in the way of confidence. That's why Hair Club offers hundreds of combinations of products and services for different hair care needs and budgets. Their team of hair health and hair loss experts can get your hair in shape, invest in yourself, and find out which Hair Club solution will work for you. Schedule a free, no obligation hair health checkup and receive 10% off select solutions by visiting hairclub.com/UFC or texting knockout to 694247. Text knockout to 694247 or go to hairclub.com/UFC to schedule a free, no obligation hair health checkup and receive 10% off select solutions. Hair Club, love your hair, live your life. Hi, buddy.
Oh, what's up, man? How
nice
are you?
Nice to meet you. How are you? Nice to meet you, Joe.
Oh, how are you, champ?
Nice to meet you. You watch the fights a lot or no?
Oh, yeah, man. I watched it. Did you watch, did you see that debauchery last night?
Are you talking about the Jake Paul?
Yeah, it was, man.
That was some production, that show. I like the way they put that thing on.
Yeah. It was all over the place. I think the highlight for me was Oscar De La Hoya. I don't know if he was contact high or just clinically insane. It was crazy.
Do you know what I noticed too? And Matt said the same thing about that. Like the idea of a novelty fight is cool, but the production around it was so weird. It's like, you don't have to make the production kind of shitty to make it feel new and different. That was what I the fight itself was fine. I kind of felt bad for Ben Askren. Like, oh, that was a humiliating loss.
Yeah, that was pretty bad, man. I don't know, man. I'm friends with, those guys too. So I feel bad when I say it, but I don't know. It's there's something wrong with the way they're building this out. There's potential, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
There's something wrong with what they're doing, and they're killing themselves.
That, Jimmy, I said this to you earlier, Jimmy. At one point, he took the camera off the fight to show Pete Davidson taking a selfie with Mario Lopez.
Yeah,
I'm like, no, what is going on? I go, what am I, crazy? Imagine, that's not happening. I mean, imagine that at a UFC. They do that. Somebody, Damian's taking a selfie with somebody. What am I looking at? It was such a train wreck. I could not believe it. It was so bad that it was good. It was one of those things. I couldn't believe it.
And then the whole thing with Frank Mir too. I felt so bad for Frank. He's got his daughter in the corner, and then they got Oscar just the way he was talking and just yelling. And it was just like so unprofessional.
Wait, what was Oscar saying? I'm sorry, I yelled. I didn't have volume on, so I couldn't hear it because I was watching two things at once and I had no volume. Was De La Hoya yelling at I thought Frank, I mean, he lost the fight, but I thought he didn't look bad. I mean, he looked like an older fighter, but I was happy that he at least went the distance. Was De La Hoya yelling at him?
Yeah, he was yelling at Frank, and then he was yelling at, I think his name's Cunningham.
Yeah,
and he kept calling him USSR. USSR, baby. USSR, baby. And I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah, what was he yelling at Cunningham? Was he yelling like that they weren't fighting well? I don't understand what the fuck he was doing.
I think Cunningham used to box for the Navy or something like that, and he has like USS as his name, right? His nickname, but he kept calling him USSR.
What an ass.
No. He's an embarrassment, man. If he has any close friends, relatives, some uncle somewhere, somebody should get him by the ear and go, dude, what are you, out of your mind?
Yeah,
to act like this on cat. Because he was such a great fighter at one point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what he's consuming, but that was embarrassing. So cringy. Frank Mir should hold his head up high, man. That's not his, it's not his forte. You know, he's a mixed martial artist. Held his own.
Yeah, he's not a boxer, man. He went in there and he held his own, man.
He's like his daughter in the corner, his family, you know, it's nice.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool.
So, yeah, did you watch the Whitaker fight? The Whitaker fight, Gastelum is literally, he's lost 5 out of 6, I think, or 4 out of 5. But what a tough fucking guy Calvin Gastelum is. I mean, even though he loses fights in a way where you're like, yeah, I'd still love to watch. It's like Mike Perry. I still want to watch that guy fight, no matter how many he wins or loses.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of those guys that are marquee fighters. It's like, of course you put him on the card. It's like he's going to give you a good fight. He's like Gotti. Yeah, man. He's just amazing.
Durable. He's in the fight, but he was a few steps behind the whole time.
Yeah.
Robert was just ahead and fought smarter, more accurate with the strikes, set up beautiful takedowns. What about him waiting for that left hook or just timing that left hook and getting the double underhooks with a basic trip? Ooh. It was really. Yeah. I remember rewinding that a few times.
Yeah.
How would you fight him though, Matt? Like, how would you fight Whitaker?
Oh, I wouldn't. I'm retired.
No, I know, but
how would you? I'm joking.
How would you fight someone like that? Because the guy is up top. He's amazing on the ground. He's amazing. Like, what could you do to this guy?
Well, I mean, listen, styles do make fights that he has been before at 170 by Wonder Boy, who's a crafty. Obviously, he was just in a. Kind of a league of his own as far as striking. He's so unique. Even with there's other karate fighters, but Wonder Boy is Wonder Boy, you know. And and also, obviously, by the champ, Israel Adesanya. You know what I mean? So, you know, Izzy's still like what Robert's really good at. Izzy's, I mean, as far as on the feet goes, Robert's really well rounded. I mean, he really is. But on the feet, I still feel that Izzy's just got that advantage. He's still going to have him outgunned. So Robert's going to have to mix up those takedowns more and whatnot in the future, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause Israel, like against, Jan Blachowicz is bigger, but if you saw the fight with Blachowicz or even the last two fights Kevin Holland has had at middleweight against Brunson and Marvin Vittori, like they're both devastating on their feet, but on the ground, it's a little bit of a struggle. But I give more of a break to Adesanya just because, Blachowicz is much heavier than he's used to fighting by I guess 20 pounds, a much bigger guy. But yeah, you don't want people to kind of get a playbook on how to beat you. So Kevin Holland's going to have to do some work on the ground before he fights again or fight just a pure striker.
Kevin Holland.
Yeah.
But I mean, what about Vittori versus, Marvin Vittori versus
Whitaker?
Yeah, man, to see who gets the shot at, two guys that lost to the champ.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, I'll tell you right now, that Italian dream is the Italian Terminator. That dude's not taking, and he even looks like a psychopath at the way in. He's making the faces. Darren Till's calling him an orc.
Even on the show, he's nice to us, but I'm always waiting for him to snap. Like he smiles, he's a fun guy, but I'm like, he's going to hate me in a minute. Yeah, Marvin's a scary dude, man. There's certain guys that when you talk to, like, you know that they're, you can never fuck around with them the wrong way or immediately you're going to have a problem. Joe, have you ever been to a fight? Because it's the atmosphere in these places. It's incredible to go to these things live.
I used to go so many times back when it first, back in the day. I saw Matt Hughes fight Hoyce Gracie. I saw Carlos Newton lose to Matt Hughes. I met Sakuraba at the fight. That was one of my biggest highlights was meeting Sakuraba. I was like, amazing. Yeah, old school UFC with my dad back in the day at the MGM, man. Those were great fights, man.
Did either one of you guys train? Was your dad was he trainer or did he just like to watch?
No, we just love the fights, man. We were so happy when UFC signed with Vegas because that was the big thing. Remember, like getting into Vegas because
I was put on that first card. Yeah, UFC 33. And it actually went long where it got cut off. Tito Ortiz's fight, like, I think it went. You know what's so funny about that for that card? It was right after 9-11 and right after 9-11, like a few weeks after. So it was a ghost town in Vegas. And the prelims were on fire. All finishes on the main card, every fight went to the distance, including mine. So Dana was pissed, but anyway.
Yeah.
Fun fact about getting to Vegas.
Yeah, man. That was the changing of the guard. That's when boxing was done. It was done. Once UFC went to Vegas, it was over, man. Over. Manny Pacquiao was the only thing saving boxing at that time. He really was.
Do you watch boxing? I can't watch boxing anymore. I used to kind of like it, but after watching UFC and getting the fights that I always want to see, like boxing, it's like I'm going to have to wait 5 years for this fight. So it just frustrates me.
Yeah, it frustrates me too. It's not exciting anymore. It's a lot of talk. It's a lot of bitch. A lot of bitch. You know what I mean? You know, that UFC, it gets right to the point. Let's go. You know what I mean? And it's the action that you want. Boxing is just like, come on, man. There's so much politics. And I think what it is it's the weight divisions too. I think there's too many damn belts. And there's too many promoters. So it's like no one can actually sign to a real fight. So it's just like, you know, you're not getting the fights that you really want.
Yeah, that's what kind of turned me against it. Are you promoting your, I think the last time I talked to you, I know you got, let me get the name of this, but I'm bad at plugs. That's why I'm a shit host. But the Netflix special is hilarious, coming in hot.
Thank you.
Mixed Plate, right? Chronicles of an All-American Combo is your book. And it's been probably a month or so since I talked to you. Have you been able to do book signings or any of that stuff, or because of COVID you can't?
Nah, COVID has been a pain in the ass, man. Plus I'm in quarantine right now. I'm in Vancouver, like literally in like luxury prison right now.
Show us the cover again, please. Show me the cover of your book. You did it really fast. I want the world to see this. Now, tell us about the book. What is this book about?
You know, it's my whole life, man. Everything that I had to go through to basically make it. You know, and I wanted to go deep. I wanted to talk about my family problems. I wanted to talk about divorce. I wanted to talk about, you know, my mom and dad, you know, splitting, and then also dealing with that type of racism in the family. My mom being Asian, my dad being white, the separation in the family. I never met my dad's side of family. And, you know, I wanted to talk about my brother. That was the most important part, because, you know, for years, I never talked about my brother. I never even told people I had a brother, because I was so embarrassed to tell people that my brother has schizophrenia. So I usually just kept it to myself. And now I let it out. And it feels good to finally talk about my brother.
Wow. Well, first of all, welcome to the fucking club. Everybody's family has some mental illness in it.
Yeah, right? Man.
I mean, for sure. I think everybody does. I mean, they have to. If not, your immediate, maybe an uncle or nephew. Jimmy, don't look at me like I'm the one who's...
No, because I'm thinking there is mental illness in my family, and I cannot put the fucking finger on anybody but myself. Like, I'm the problem. Like, in the family, yeah. I am definitely the one that has it.
Oh, you know what's sad? I think I'm the same one. That's what's really sad. But anyway, it's just, I think that affects a lot of families. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's great that you're talking about it.
Yeah, it sucks because, you know, back in the day, it was kind of like a thing that you just don't tell anybody. That's something that stays in the family and you keep it here. And nowadays it's you don't want to ignore something like that. Everyone struggles with it. Just because your family member has mental issues, you struggle with that too as well, because you're hiding it all the time. You're embarrassed about it. You shouldn't be embarrassed about it. Like, everyone deals with mental health issues, and we all need to recognize it and get help.
It's so hard to navigate because, like, people get, like, you get so angry sometimes at somebody who's, because you can't see it. Like, it's you're like, why don't you just do this? And but they don't. And I had a guy, I knew a guy, he was a big mental health speaker. He would go around, talk. He was really like a bit of an expert, I guess. But he said something interesting. He said, mental illness is a physical illness. And it made a point, like, because it's all chemicals, when chemicals are physical. And it was like, yeah, it is a physical thing. Even though it's not this thing in the atmosphere, a mental illness is a physical thing. I mean, it's not made up of magic. It's made up of physical shit. And that kind of helped me think about it a little bit differently.
Yeah, it's now that I finally got to get it out in the open, and a lot of people have been coming forward and appreciating that story and also relating to it. It just feels good. I've been talking to my brother a couple times since I let the book out. And, you know, it's a better understanding between our relationship now.
And he likes it. He's happy you're talking about it. He's cool with it.
Well, my brother, you know, unfortunately, he has a severe case. So, you know, a window with my brother is, it's open about that much, Jim. It opens for about half a second, and you know you got Robert. You know what I mean? And you get to have fun for about 30 seconds, and then boom, it's gone. And I got to learn how to respect that and understand that, you know, that's his mental health issue that I have to, like, you know, overcome. I have to, like, help him with that. So it's hard.
You wonder, does the person know it at all? Like, there's a weird moment, like in The Exorcist, right, where she's possessed, and then there's a moment where she know, like she's like, you see the real person come through, and they like they know they're. So you wonder, does somebody with mental illness like that, when they poke their head out, or when you see the real person, do they know that they're kind of going back behind a curtain, or do they not see it happening? Because sad man. If they know it.
Ah, that's such a great question, and I don't think they do, man. I really don't. You know, I was watching Glass, Jim. You ever watched Glass, that movie Glass?
No, the M. Night movie, right? I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah, and you know what I loved about that movie is when I was watching it, I go, holy shit, that's my brother right there. That's my brother. Like, to me, he's a superhero. Like, my brother, you know, when I was a kid, fighting 7 cops, you know what I mean? Getting beat in the back of the head, and he's looking at me like, oh, they're not taking me. Fuck that, Joe. They're not fucking taking me. They're choking him out. They're arresting him. He's, you know, he's kidnapping people just to go to the hospital. And, you know, when you see that as a kid, you think of him as like some type of superhero, you know what I mean? But he's just dealing with a mental health problem. And that's the realization of what he's got. It's just, it's so extreme. And it's so hard to like, it's a hard pill to swallow, man, to see your family member go down like that.
And it's a very rough situation. Every circumstance I'm sure is different. But so it takes a while sometimes for them to find the right medication and to get it leveled out. So I know from what I've witnessed in my family, where it's like, yo, are we ever going to get a version back of my brother or somebody? Or, and then it's like, you know, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Yeah. I have several in my family, but sometimes they do come back. They get it leveled out. Like, you know, and it's all right. They found the right, I guess, they found the right dose or whatever it is, or right medicine to put them on. And all right, now this is the guy I can laugh with or whatever. I've seen it, like, both sides of that.
Yeah.
And get it right and then not get it at all.
No, you got that. But unfortunately, my brother is just one of those extreme cases. Where it's beyond medicine. It's a lot of hospital. It's a lot of, he can't function outside of the hospital, and it sucks, man. But you know what? He's funny as shit, dude. He's definitely the funniest one in the family. And I love it. You know, when I get that, my brother for like this much, he's always cracking a quick joke and it's funny. We laugh. And then, you know, I got to just enjoy that moment while I have it.
Isn't it funny too? Like, people, there's something about like mental illness, it lowers inhibitions too. So you'll say anything. And that's kind of what makes people funny sometimes, is they say shit without a filter. And you know, a lot of really funny people are kind of crazy. You know what I mean? Like, we'll have something. Yeah. Do you know, Joe, any healthy comics? Totally. I don't know any. Like, they're either OCD or they're alcoholics or they're sex addicts or they're drug addicts. There's something crazy with every fucking person I know who does comedy.
So true. That is so true, man. I'm crazy. Like, my anxiety level is through the roof. But yeah, I think every comic I know is dealing with some type of mental health issue, you know, but the cool thing about it now, Jim, is it's okay to talk about it. You know, it's not taboo anymore. Like when we were kids, you know, you never wanted to tell somebody you needed therapy, or you didn't want to tell people that you're struggling with some type of mental problem. But now it's like, man, I need therapy. If you're like, yeah, man, let me suggest you to this doctor real quick.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing, man.
Yeah, there's no more taboo. Like, I think it was after World War II. Like, a lot of those guys that came back and had seen horrible shit. And they said the one thing that a lot of them regretted is they couldn't talk about it.
Yep.
Like, you know how those guys, my grandfather was over there. He didn't fucking say a word. But those guys were just, it was eating them, and they had no one to go and talk to about it. So it seems like it's this new age, but it's actually really healthy to kind of vomit it out like that and talk about it.
Yeah, man. And that's in anything too, man. Just talk about it. I think that's what destroys relationships, is people keep things in too much. It's like, if you just talk about it and let it out, all that anger and all that negative energy that you have is gone. There's nothing to get mad about anymore. Just let it out. If you keep it in, it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
Joe, how long? I know people are going to read the book and find out everything in detail, but how long were you married for? Because you said you got divorced.
Oh, man. I was only married for about a year, man.
Oh, okay. The honeymoon's over, huh?
Yeah, But her and I are best friends, man.
Oh, that's good.
Best friends, man. Every vacation I go on, she comes with me and my son. You know, she everywhere I move her right next to me. She's got all the codes to my house. She's staying at my house right now, to be honest. She's watching my son. And so it's like not even a thing. We have the best relationship.
Now, Joe, are you in Vancouver right now working?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? Because Vancouver is kind of open, so you can go up there and do gigs and whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm doing my movie out here. I'm shooting a movie.
Okay, so you have to quarantine before you shoot.
Yeah. Getting awesome. Ready to shoot it May 3rd. Yep. Unbelievable,
that's great.
Man.
Thank good for you, buddy. Good, good. Is it your life story?
It's called Easter Sunday. Bro, Steven Spielberg. It's with Steven.
You're doing a Spielberg movie?
Yeah, he saw Coming in Hot, my special, brought me in. And he brought me in for a meeting and asked me to pitch a movie. I pitched this one, and here we are about a year later shooting it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now yeah. When you walked in, when you're sitting with Steven Spielberg the first time, how does it go and how do you get over being frightened because of Steven Spielberg?
The thing is, we had no idea that he was even interested. We just went in for a general.
Okay.
And then we walked into Amblin, and it was the president, you know, Holly and Jeb, they were in there. And they told us that he was a huge fan and he wanted to make a movie with me. And that's, I've never even met him because of the pandemic.
You still haven't met him?
Not yet, man. He sent me an email. That was kind of cool, man. The best email ever, man.
That's funny.
Yeah. But he said he's going to try and make it out here for this. If not, when we wrap, he's definitely going to meet up with me in LA.
So did you try to play it cool when they're like Spielberg, I guess he's producing the film. He wants to do a movie. Did you go, well, yeah. Or did you just immediately go, yes, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It was so funny because when we were in there, they kept saying, hey, Steven wants to make a movie with you. And they said it like three times. And then the third time I was just like, are we talking about Steven from accounting or are we talking about the same Steven? Like, who are we talking about right now? You can't just throw the name Steven. And they said, no, it's Steven. Spielberg wants to do a movie with you. And I can't believe it. It's so surreal, man.
Well, wow. You don't want to assume it's Spielberg if it's not, because that would suck. Like, Steven wants to do a movie, and then you find out, like, no, Steve Mickelson. He's a new guy.
Yeah.
Fuck. That would be that's exactly what would happen to me. I'd get my hopes up, and it would be the wrong guy. And Bert Kreischer is in Serbia now with Mark Hamill doing his movie. It's kind of cool to see. Did you see the video he put with Mark Hamill on that plane?
Hell yeah, I saw that. That's so cool, man. Couldn't happen to a better guy, man.
Star Wars, Mark Hamill?
Yes. Yeah. With Bert Kreischer, he's doing Bert has this story, The Machine. I've seen the story and I don't remember it, but it's a very famous, he's a great storyteller. I'm a terrible storyteller. Like, I admire you guys who can tell a good, long, Jim Brewer's, you know, Jim Brewer, he's a great storyteller.
Love Jim Brewer.
Yeah. Some guys can just tell a story. I stink at telling it. I'm good at jokes, but I'm very bad at like roping people in and keeping them. I see their eyes just do that. I lose them quickly.
He's doing a movie with Mark Hamill.
He is. Yeah. So now do you sign books and then send them out as signed books? Like, cause you could do that at home, right? You could get some signed books.
Yeah. I've signed about, I think we signed close to 2,000, 3,000 so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we're getting ready to do another signing.
You've written this thing. I mean, did you have a writer with you? You work with somebody or you just?
Yeah, I had a ghostwriter and it took me about 2.5 years to write this.
So now how does that work? Like you talk to this guy every day and like, not every day, whatever it is. And like, listen, man. And then he comes with you and shows you. How does that work?
Yeah, that's exactly what you do. You sit there and you tell those stories in detail and then you guys just go over what he's writing, you know, and you know, you also want it to be in your words. So
you watch him
and he killed it. He killed this. And it was 2.5 years of my life with this guy, Chris. So he's amazing.
You got to get the right. How did you choose him now? Because you have to get the right person, right?
Yeah. There was a lot of interviews and this guy was just, he was amazing. I just knew he was the one.
And Joe, if there's something like you want differently, because you're you never know if it's a book company and they're giving you, okay, we'll give you the deal. But you had final say, right? And what went in, like, if you're like, no, I'd rather reverse that. You did.
Yeah. They gave me everything. 100% was me. They let me do everything from pictures to the cover to everything. It's amazing. HarperCollins, by the way, the amazing book company.
That's good because now you'll always feel like you will never look at that and go, I don't like the way. Sometimes it helps to have somebody just help structure it. Like a ghostwriter is good to structure something and just kind of say, well, this maybe could follow this. And then you read it and go, yeah, that makes sense. Just to kind of help, you know, set things in a certain order that make reading sense.
Yeah. You know, the toughest part, Jim and Matt, is the audio. So whenever you guys decide to do a book, don't sign up for the audio because that was the most emotional thing I've ever done in my life. I think I cried so much during that time. I've never cried so much in my life.
Oh wow,
it was rough.
Is it on the audio, or do you have to like do double takes or something? Or is it?
Yeah, there were so many double takes, and it was just, you know, when you read those stories out loud, you know, and you listen to your own story, it's emotional. Reflecting back on your mom and dad divorcing, or your brother fighting with the cops, and you know, your sister leaving at 16, leaving the house, and you know, you can only cry. You know what I mean? It's therapeutic. I'll tell you that much. But yeah. It's hard. It's tough. That, now I see why people hire other people to read their books, because it's hard.
Yeah, like I don't want to cry. I'll let Patrick Stewart do it, or somebody, or Donald Sutherland, or one of those guys that have a great speaking voice.
Yeah, exactly. Donald Sutherland would be great.
Isn't it great? Every time I see a fucking plane commercial, it's Donald Sutherland. You know, Delta cares about. I love when I hear those guys, 80 years old, still working. Don't you get encouraged by that, dude? Like a comedian who's, you know, fucking 78 or 80, still doing, like Joan Rivers awesome before she, you know, still doing gigs at 80.
And still crushing it. Don Rickles was sitting on a chair for 2 hours on stage. He didn't give a shit. He was like 80 something years old. It's like amazing.
Yeah, we went to, it's funny, I was in Montreal, and Rickles was doing something a few years ago. He was sitting on the stage, but it was in his dressing room. A bunch of comedians just went back, like Gabriel Iglesias and a few other guys, but it was like everybody just wanted to be around Rickles for a minute, like just to say hello, or to, you know, to pay tribute. Like, it's really weird when you're on that level. Everybody just kind of wants to come and just speak to you for a second and tell you how much they appreciate you.
Yeah. And that's one thing I kicked myself on. I never got to meet the guy, but God, he was my favorite. He was the king.
Who did you meet? Who's one of your idols comedically that you did get to meet? I mean, I've been pretty lucky. I've gotten to at least briefly interact, even if it's only for a second, with most of the guys I loved growing up.
I think, you know, one, Eddie Murphy, I got to meet him. You know, I think, you know, Dave is just on some other level right now, Jim.
Bushbell, yeah.
Yeah. And working with Dave was just, you know, amazing. Did you do his Yellow Spring show in Ohio?
I did not. No, he's never asked me. So that's a real fucking point of contention with him. No, but I would do it. Sure.
You're so stupid.
Maybe next year, Dave will. Dave probably lost my number. I'm gonna fucking reach out to goddamn Chappelle.
I think my favorite. No, Dave is amazing, but my favorite story is writing a joke with Richard Jenny at the Laugh Factory. That was one of the coolest moments in my. That was a highlight. Oh, and Robin Williams. I got to write a joke with Robin Williams in the green room.
Isn't that a great feeling?
Whoo! That was amazing, man. Amazing. Bob Saget comes into the room and goes, "Hey, I'm going to bring up Robin Williams." And I was like, I go, "Bob, man, like I was the host. I was the host of the show." I go, "Just let me bring up Robin, dude. Like, we don't know when Robin's coming back." He goes, "No, we got this thing." Anyways, he brings up Robin. I'm depressed. Robin says goodnight. He walks off stage. I start walking back upstage, and I just looked at him. I hugged him, and I go, "Man, I wanted to bring you up, but Bob wanted to bring you up." He goes, "Oh, okay. Well, go back on stage and bring you back on stage." I go, "Why?" He goes, "Yeah, bring me back up. Then we'll have fun for like 5 minutes." And I brought him back on stage. It was the coolest moment ever, man. He let me bring him back up. And we riffed for about 5 minutes, and it was the biggest highlight ever.
That's how scary is that, though? Because he was to go back and forth when he's on stage would be very. I would be very nervous to do that. He was a ferociously fast thinker.
He was crazy fast, and that was for the Oscars too. He was warming up for the Oscars, so he's practicing a routine. So he was on fire that night. And I was working at Nordstrom Rack. I was shelving shoes the next day. So it was like, you know, my life couldn't have been any better. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You always hear how nice he was. You always hear how nice Robin was.
Well, he was amazing, man.
Yeah. It was almost like he was above everybody because he had won an Oscar and he was famous from the 70s. Like, even guys like Seinfeld who come in, who again is a legend, but when Robin Williams came in, it was a different energy because Robin was famous from like 1979. Like, you know, he was kind of an icon through almost my entire life. So
yeah,
he was a different level of famous.
That's so funny. That's so funny you said that, Jim, because I always say that there's levels of famous. And because that night, Chris Rock went up because Chris Rock was hosting the Oscars. So they both came in and worked out. And it was so crazy because Chris went up first and, you know, the place went nuts, right? The place went nuts when I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Rock," they all went nuts. And then he left. And then we introduced Robin, and it was over with, man. So there's Chris Rock famous, and then there was Robin Williams famous. It was out the roof.
Yeah, Robin was a different. He was, because again, he was a movie star too, who had won an Oscar. Like, just a different, you know, and was putting out records. Like, you know, just from that era, from that generation, Mork and Mindy, yeah. And he just had a long, long run, man. What a
sad.
Great comic. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Let me ask you, Joe, because we're talking about all the hardships and in your book and how emotional it was and everything. You're a comedian. Where did the funny come from? Like, how did you find the funny? Or how did the funny find you? And how old were you when you realized there's a lot of shit going on, but, you know, I got this kind of outlet or whatever?
I was a depressed kid, man. I didn't realize how depressed I was until I wrote this book. But I think a lot of the comedy came from me being depressed. It's, you know, military life sucked. You know what I mean? Every 4 years we were moving. And then my mom and dad divorced. Then I'm a mixed kid, you know. Now I'm being raised by this, you know, Asian woman and no dad in the house. And, you know, my mom dealing with racism, it sucked, you know? So there was a lot of, there's this one story I write about in the book, and I can't remember. I can't believe I remember it in detail, but we won this prize at JCPenney. We went upstairs to go get it. And the family in front of us won another prize too, but I guess they were mad at us because we won the TV, whatever it is. And I remember my mom looked at the kid and he was waving at the kid like, hi. And then the kid turned around and pulled his eyes back, went, whoa. And I just remember as a kid seeing my mom, how she reacted. And I was just like, what was that? Like, I didn't even know what that was. Like, what was that? She's like, it's okay. He's just trying to be funny, Joseph. And like, to me, that's the kind of shit my mom had to go through. Like, even though she was an American, she still felt like she was a visitor. And for her to even say anything that's wrong or say something out loud, she would feel at the wrong to do that. You know what I mean? It's okay for people to make fun of her. And that was the kind of shit that we used to go through. So there was a lot of stuff that I had to keep in and, you know, joke around and make fun of and just laugh. And I guess that's what I did. I went to comedy a lot. Stand-up was my thing. I couldn't stop watching it.
There's a lot of, I'm watching this show. I can't stop talking about it. Jimmy knows what I'm talking about. It's called Warrior. It's on HBO Max. The Chinese gangs and whatnot, they have some assassins that just start taking the people that are doing all the or who are just mistreating the Chinese there, and they're just fucking slicing their heads off, just cutting off limbs. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's more to it than that. But once you started talking about getting discriminated against, like, that movie has a lot to do with that, like, from back in, obviously, the Civil War era and shit. But it was fucking, I don't know, it just so fucking cool. It gets you like, fuck yeah, do that to those prejudiced sea suckers. They bust their heads off.
Now, Joe, before we have our next guest has just arrived. But before we let you go, I want to promote your book properly and the tour. And this is the first time hearing about the movie. So I'm happy for you, man. And your special is, let me get this name of the special on Netflix, unless you want to just say it, because I'm so bad at keeping my paperwork. Oh, it's called Coming in Hot. And the book is called Mixed Plate Chronicles of an All-American Combo. And of course, the Koi Pond is a podcast that's great, and I've done it. And I love you, Joe. I'm really, really happy for you to have this great period happening for you. You're a great guy and you're a great comic.
Thank you so much, Joe. That was awesome. Thanks, Matt.
Nice to meet you, Joe. Come back again.
Yeah, we'll talk to you anytime. I would love to have you on again.
All right, you guys.
Take care. Enjoy, Joe. Good luck with the film.
Thank you.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So So, Matt, it was good having a thank you to Joe Coy and thank you to Ali Abdelaziz for coming on.
And we'll talk more in detail. But I know we talked about Robert Whittaker's win. He did fantastic. I want really quick. Andre Arlovski, man, dude, the guy keeps on going. That was his 20th win, you know. Yep. Tracy Cortez looked awesome. Taking out Justine Kish. Luis Pena defeated Alex Munoz. Very close fight, but yep. It was a good fight. And then Jacob Malkoon took out Abdul Razak. And wow, that was a good one too. I mean, listen. Oh, and really quick, only because Jessica Penne didn't fight for years. And she came back to take out, I thought her name was Loopy. They were calling her Loopy. Gandina, I'm pronouncing the name wrong, but it was Loopy on the show. It said Loopy on the screen. Fuck with me. Anyway, Jessica Penny, and also Jimmy, really quick, I just wanted to say, I want to give a congrats to Gerald Mershot because he came back after that getting defeated.
Yep, you know, he did.
And he came back in great fashion, fighting a judo expert in Bartos, and he got a beautiful guillotine.
Yeah.
All right, Jimmy, that's all I wanted to say.
Yes, and we'll talk again in 2 days. And thank you for both of our guests for coming on. And that's always a delight, Matt.
It's always a delight, Jimmy. I will see you in a couple of days, buddy.
All right, pal. Talk to you soon.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.